The meeting will come to order. We do have a quorum. And Representative Benson, would you like to move the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the minutes for March 21st, 2007. 22nd. Excuse me, you're correct.
Representative Benson moves approval of the minutes for Thursday, March 22nd. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Okay. Members, we are going to go through the K-12 Omnibus Finance Bill today. And people are just quickly getting a copy of it. Today's a day for clarification questions from the members. And tomorrow will be the day for any political statements that anybody wants to make and any amendments. I know Representative Demmer wants to do it today and tomorrow, but if he could contain himself, because we want to get through the entire bill so that if you do have questions, they can be answered today. And if we do have time, then we would entertain any statements from the public. But otherwise, we will have to stick with plowing through the bill because we absolutely want to get it out there and people can, so people can understand it from our fiscal staff and our House research and caucus staff. So I will now turn it over to Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow, and we'll go through each article. Article 1, we will make it through. I'd like to go through each article in its entirety before we go to questions on that article. Then we'll go to the next article in its entirety, and then we'll have questions on that article and so forth. And like I said, hopefully we can have time for testimony from the public, but that will depend upon members' questions, which this is a time when we want to get those answered as well. So, Mr. Crow, are you starting or Mr. Strong? Ben? Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, we'll start with Article 1, the process Ms. Larson, Mr. Crow, and I will use this to go through the articles, just briefly touch on the ones that are not of substance, highlight the ones where changes have been made, and then at the end of each article, Mr. Crow will walk you through the spreadsheets for the aid appropriations and the levy changes contained in each of those articles. You should have in your packet both a House Research Bill summary and a grouping of articles. The articles should all say KLL-HART in the upper right-hand corner, followed by the article number. That's the shorthand for House Article, Article 1. So we're going to start with KLL-HART 1, Article 1, the General Education Article. Madam Chair, members, the first change is simply technical, corrects a cross-reference. Section 2 is a modification to the way that charter school general education is revenue is paid. This is in similar to the governor's language and has to do with the new transportation sparsity formula. Sections 3, 4, and 5 are simply clarifications of learning year program statutes. Section 6 is the career and technical levy section. Under current law, a school district has levy authority for that program. This bill is adding a new aid to go along with the levy. The aid amount is set at 10% of each district's qualifying expenditures for that year. Section 7 of the bill removes the 5-year limitation on the number of years that an LEP student may qualify for funding under our state funding formulas. Section 8 is another change to the LEP program. The basic formula allowance, there are two LEP formula allowances, a basic and a concentration formula. Section 8 changes the basic formula from $700 to $815 per LEP formula. Later in this article, you'll see the elimination of the concentration formula. Section 9 is one of a couple of changes that go with the tax relief that is contained both in this bill and in Representative Marquardt's property tax article that was released to the public today as well. Essentially, this article is defining the equalizing factor for referendum market value as a percentage of the statewide referendum market value to the total number of pupil units for that year. Section 10 is a provision that increases funding for full-day kindergarten. This changes the kindergarten pupil weighting from 0.557 to 0.86. This change is effective in the second year of the biennium and forward. The next two changes, sections 11 and 12, have to do with the extended time program. These changes are the same as the governor's and increase the funding for extended time from an additional 20% to an additional 50%. So the funding go from 1.2 to a maximum of 1.5 for extended time pupils. Section 13 is the basic formula allowance. This bill increases the basic formula allowance by 3% per year, so the formula allowance would go to $5,125 for fiscal year 2008 and $5,280 for fiscal year 2009. Section 14 is the extended time revenue. This revenue remains delinked from the formula, but the amounts are bumped up by the same 3%. So for fiscal year 08, the formula is $4,740, and for fiscal year 09 and later, $4,880. Section 15 of the bill increases the funding for gifted and talented programming from $9 per pupil unit to $14 for FY 08 and to $15 for years thereafter. Section 16, as I mentioned earlier, is the elimination of the LEP concentration formula. Section 17 is another part of the tax relief package that's in both this bill and Representative Marquardt's bill. The operating capital levy is lowered by about $78 million per year. This is done by increasing the equalizing factor. Section 18 of the bill is the governor's recommendation on using more recent coefficients to calculate the transportation sparsity revenue. Section 19 of the bill draft has to do with equity revenue. Currently, those school districts whose referendum are above the 95th percentile are eligible for only $23 instead of $46 as a part of that equity revenue. Section 20, then, is a provision that's coupled with the all-day K provision. This allows school districts to spend on early education programs money saved when 12th graders graduate early. Right now, under current statute, when a 12th grader graduates early, the school district can continue to count that student for the remainder of the year. One of the eligible uses for spending that money is on kindergarten programs. This section broadens that to include other early education programs and school readiness programs. Section 21 is a cross-reference. Section 22 has to do with the compensatory revenue program. Under current law, a school district must spend 95%, at least 95% of the revenue at the sites where that compensatory revenue is generated. This provision would allow the school district to retarget some of that 5% and allow the school district to spend that money on school readiness or other pre-K programs. Section 23 is part of the property tax change. The referendum equalization formula currently has two tiers. The first tier under current law is set at $476,000. This bill changes that to 120% of the statewide average referendum market value tax base, which our current estimate is $567,000. The second tier goes from $270,000 to 60% of the statewide average equalizing statewide average tax base, which is just about where it is now, $283,000. Section 24 has to do with the ballot language when a referendum is renewed. Under current law, when a referendum is proposed that would increase the amount, there's a statement that's required that says that the referendum will raise your property taxes. When a referendum is being renewed, the language that says currently that says you may be voting for a tax increase is replaced with language saying you are not raising your referendum tax rate. Section 25 has to deal with the county apportionment and includes the wind energy payments, which currently are 6% of the total in the county apportionment revenue. That means essentially that those wind tax payments will be offset from the district's other aid instead of being on top of the district's other aid. Section 26 is a process for members of cooperative school districts to use to adjust their general education aid in the event that the school district's cooperative fails to meet the federal special education maintenance of effort requirements. Section 27 has to do with the Safe Schools Levy, and several changes are made to this section. First, Madam Chair, the $27 per pupil is increased by $3 to $30 per pupil for all school districts in the state. Second, school districts that are members of intermediate school districts receive another $5 per pupil in levy authority. Third, there's an additional authorization for how that money can be spent. This bill broadens the the authorization so that licensed support personnel, including counselors, school nurses, and others, can be included in the uses of Safe Schools revenue. And finally, there's a new maintenance of effort requirement for school districts so that they don't supplant their current spending for the licensed school support personnel. Section 28 is technical. Section 29 has to do with the alternative attendance program adjustments. This is essentially the adjustment that was proposed in Representative Knuth's bill at slightly different levels for districts that receive a number of students under open enrollment. If more than 20% of a student's or of a school district's population is open enrolled into the district, additional state aid as part of the referendum equalization aid follows the student to the school district. Finally, this section differs from the new section in that if a school district is serving more than 50% online students, the district does not qualify for aid under this provision. Section 30 essentially is the corresponding change to the transportation sparsity formula that was mentioned earlier. Sections 31 and 32 and 33 are essentially technical adjustments. Section 34 modifies the program that was passed in 2005 that allows up to 5 school districts to apply for a pilot project to redistribute compensatory revenue. This section broadens that program by adding the Brooklyn Center School District to the list of those that may participate in the program. Section 35 corrects an error from last year's school finance bill and corrects the date of that error. Section 36 establishes a task force. This is a task force that will look at school finance reform. The provision sets the membership of the task force to be appointed by the House and Senate leadership and specifies the conditions and circumstances the task force must examine. Section 37 is a provision that requires the Commissioner of Education to undertake a study related to the transportation of charter school pupils. And, Madam Chair, I'll skip ahead. We'll leave the appropriations for Mr. Crow. I'll skip ahead to Sections 39 and 40. 39 is simply a reviser's instruction to make corresponding cross-references for one of the repealers in Section 40. And then Section 40 repeals two provisions, the first being an obsolete enrollment options provision, and the second being the first grade preparedness program beginning with fiscal year 2009.
Thank you, Mr. Schramm. Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, if you pull out your spreadsheet, it looks like this. It says appropriation 326.07, 1:57 p.m. in the upper left-hand corner, 2000 session appropriation tracking. The first four pages are appropriations. The last two pages are levy changes. Probably makes sense since the levy sheet isn't organized by article. I'll do the appropriations for Article 1. And then we'll look a little bit at the levy tracking sheet in total. So actually, we'll do the levies at the end. So let's just look at the first page of your appropriation tracking sheet. The important columns for you to take a look at to see what changes are in this bill are the seventh from the right, which says difference house minus base. That's where you can see how much money was added over the base for recommendations for fiscal years 2008 and 2009. So, for example, on line 5, you see the basic formula amount of $51.25 and $52.80. And the cost of that change is reflected on line 14, where you see $441,466,000 appropriated to cover the cost of raising the basic formula amount. The next two lines are programs that are linked directly to the formula, shared time and contract alternatives. You can see the change related to the formula change in those lines. Line 17 is the cost of increasing the of doing the all-day kindergarten through increasing the pupil weighting for kindergarten students to 0.86 and about $95 million. Line 18, the LEP change where the proposal would repeal the five-year limit, eliminate concentration, and increase the basic revenue for LEP costs $11 million. The next two lines are tied together and relate to increasing the extended time formula by 3% per year and extending the ADM maximum from 1.2 to 1.5 for total cost of about $20 million. Then on line 21, there's $4 added into Gifted and Talented in 2008 and $5 in 2009 for a total cost of $8.7 million. Then on line 22, you see the aid component of raising the equity revenue for districts that are limited to $23 to allow them to levy up to $46. That's an equalized levy. This is the $248,000 is the equalization aid on that levy. The total levy increase you'll see on the other sheet is about $1.7 million. This is just the aid portion, and that the larger part is on the levy tracking sheet. Line 23 is the $3.6 million on updating the transportation sparsity formulas. Line 24 and 25 are the two Article 1 tax reduction provisions and total about $110 million between operating capital, lowering the operating capital levy and lowering referendum levy by increasing equalization aid in both of those programs. Line 27 is the school impact of a change in the natural resources bill. Line 28 is a technical change moving, if you look down to line 41, moving $16.538 million of revenue out of a separate appropriation into the general education appropriation. So the net of those two lines is zero. Then line 29 is the online learning changes. The net cost is $253,000. And line 30 is the open enrollment referendum aid, the alternative attendance provision. $2 million is allocated for that. Then if you move outside of the general ed appropriation, the balance of Article 1 starts on line 41 with the tax-based replacement change. Then line 43 is a change in how abatement aid is calculated. Line 45 and 46 are the two non-public pupil programs that are linked to the basic formula amount and so increased by about $2.3 million in total. Then down on line 51 is $220,000 for Browns Valley for declining pupil aid. 52 for McGregor, $100,000. 53 is where the $75,000 per year is added for the compensatory pilots for Brooklyn Center, and 54 is $100,000 for the Education Finance Task Force. Should note as you're reading through, if you look at the program name and it's italicized, that means there's a change item related to that program name, so that'll help you skim through it as well. And that's the appropriations change.
Okay, members, any questions on Article 1? President Heidrichsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Crow, if you could, the Permanent School Trust Fund was showing a negative. We made some changes last year on that, and where does that money now? We get some money from that trust fund each year. Where do those money show up?
Madam Chair, Representative Heidgerken, Permanent School Fund is buried in the General Education Appropriation on line 13.
Okay.
Basically, that's offset by about $20 million of Permanent School Fund revenue. The change on line 27 shows a savings to the state basically because some of the things they're doing in DNR are actually going to generate additional revenue.
Okay.
So there's less state money that has to be paid in general education because of the greater revenue from the Permanent School Trust Fund.
Okay.
Representative Garofalo, followed by Representative Demmer. Representative Demmer to go first. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Crow, if you would, could you talk a little bit about lines 24 and 25, the operating capital equalizing factor increase, and also referendum equalization aid, and maybe give us a little bit of connection with in the tax. And I know we're not doing tax bills here, but they do connect, and I think you commented on that. Could you talk about that a little bit more, maybe Mr. Trump, whichever, just to kind of give us some clarity on the dollars that are here, maybe versus the dollars that are over there?
Mr. Trump.
Madam Chair and Representative Demmer and members, maybe this is a good point to tie you into the levy tracking sheet as well, mm-hmm. to see what happens on the levy side when we make these aid appropriations for property tax relief. So you can what you see on the appropriation tracking sheet is a 90% appropriation. Basically, we fund to buy tax relief, you pay for 90% of it in the first year because these are appropriations that are 90-10. So if you, we have that 70 million or so, 70 and a half million of operating capital equalization aid. If you go over to the levy tracking sheet, which is the fourth page of, or the third page of your packet, and it says education finance levies in the upper left-hand corner. If you look at line 9, and on this sheet, there's kind of a gap. The two groups of six columns to the right are the tails, are fiscal 10 and 11, and so we're focused mainly on fiscal 09 because we can only affect the second year of the biennium. So the third column, well, the first column to the left of that gap says House minus current law difference, and that's for fiscal 2009. So if you go down to line 9, you see a $79.3 million reduction in the operating capital levy. And that's what's paid for with the $70 million on the appropriation side, is that levy reduction. Similarly, down on line 17, you see the increased referendum equalization saves about $36 million. This one doesn't quite work out the same because when we're calculating the levy impact of a referendum equalization aid increase, some money gets... the savings isn't, you don't generate as much levy savings with your aid because we build in a behavioral change, assuming that additional districts will pass referendums if this change is made. So it isn't a one-for-one property tax reduction like it is on the operating capital side. As far as the tax bill goes, I know they have components of both of these. I don't think what's in the tax bill is as much on the operating capital equalization, and maybe Mr. Strom will suggest that.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, there are a couple of levy changes that Mr. Crow alluded to earlier that the House has made, including the Safe Schools levy and the levy for equity revenue. Because the House K-12 Committee has a zero levy target, those levy increases need to be offset with other levy decreases. So the amount that the operating capital levy goes down is greater in this committee than it is in the tax bill. And the reason for that is because other levies in this bill are going up, and this is offsetting it. So the total levy dollars spent by the two bills are the same, but the tax bill that was released today does not include the increase in the Safe Schools levy or the corresponding portion of the operating capital levy decrease that offsets that.
And
Mr. Strong,
Madam
Mr.
Chair, Representative Dimmer and members, if you look to the very bottom of the back page, you can see that basically the target was negative $125 million, $125 million of tax relief. And so if you look in that column right next to the gap and you see total certified levy after credits on line 187 is negative $125,315.1. So that's basically the zero levy target because there was the target was to do $125 million of property tax reductions. Now, if all that was done in this bill was what was in the tax bill, there wouldn't have been enough tax relief because that number goes up by, for example, if you look on lines 36 and 37, that's where you see those Safe Schools levy changes. So you can see there's an additional $5 million of levy there. So if all that was in this bill was the operating capital reduction that was in the that's in the tax bill, that number would be negative 120 instead of negative 125. So an additional $5 million of operating capital reduction had to be bought to offset those levies, those levy increases.
And Madam Chair, distributionally, the way to think about that is the operating capital, which is spread statewide, is going down. That levy is going down, whereas those districts that are members of intermediates, for example, their levy would be going up by the $2.6 million. The operating capital levy statewide would go down by that same amount to buy that off.
Representative Grappolo, or Representative Demmer, were you
finished? For the state school part, you mean.
Okay. Representative Grappolo.
Oh. Madam Chair, I think my question would be a lot easier.
Rep. Demmer has always got hard questions.
he's smarter than me, too. On line 30 on the front page, the open enrollment referendum aid. And Madam Chair, perhaps you could answer this with someone else. Is that the Knuth bill?
Ms. Rep. Brackwell, yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Article 2.
Madam Chair, members, Article 2 is a composite of a number of bills authored by legislators here in the House, as well as a number of proposals offered up by the governor. Article 2, Section 1 governs access to student records. It's part of a bill that Representative Mullery introduced, 744. It allows a child's parent to designate a significant individual who is then able to participate in a school conference involving that child. However, the parent must give prior written consent to make this possible. Section 2 is a combination of two bills, one that Representative Slawick introduced and another that Representative Dominguez introduced. It's to provide early childhood literacy programs. The intent is to offer a seamless literacy instruction program to children age 3 through grade 3 in order to close the literacy achievement gap. Section 3 is from the Governor's House File 1197. It addresses the records of transfer students and what happens to students' records when a charter school closes. Sections 4, 5, and 6 come from House File 420. That bill proposes to make health and physical education state standards. Section 7 comes from House File 1852. It requires school boards to report on student achievement in those subject areas where locally developed assessments and standards apply. Section 8 is from House File 804. It provides funding for new and expanded pre-advanced placement, advanced placement, or international baccalaureate programs, and the intent is to increase the availability of and all students' access to and completion of these programs. Section 9 is from House File 2021. It's a direction, well, first it's proposes to fund the Office of Educational Accountability through the University of Minnesota. It directs that office to report annually to the legislature on how effectively the commissioner makes statistical adjustments consistent with statutory requirements, how well the commissioner uses indicators of student achievement growth over time and a value-added assessment model to measure student performance, and whether the commissioner makes data available on students who do not pass the state grad tests and do not receive a diploma. Section 10 is also from House File 2021. It strikes a direction to the Education Commissioner to identify 4 to 6 designations related to high and low performing schools. Section 11 is a proposal from the governor. It directs school districts to adopt policies and procedures for the academic acceleration of gifted and talented students. Section 12 is also from the governor's House File 1197. It contains clarifications about statewide accountability related to integrating the state's reading and math basic skills tests into the state's MCA2s and establishing a writing proficiency test. It also includes language regarding a value-added component that would be part of the accountability system no later than the 2008-2009 school year, and acknowledges that the value-added component is in addition to a measure for student achievement growth over time. Sections 13, 14, and 15 come from House File 748. They have to do with the ability of school personnel to administer physician-prescribed naturopathic medicines in schools. Section 16 it comes from House File 615. It would allow school districts to offer a responsible family life and sexuality education program for students in grades 7 through 12 that is age-appropriate and medically accurate. Section 17 is another proposal from the governor. It's language related to highly qualified teachers. It defines a highly qualified teacher to meet the characteristics consistent with No Child Left Behind, and it strikes language relating to a house process that is no longer needed. Section 18 comes from House File 365. It proposes to change the formula for calculating the alternative teacher compensation revenue for qualifying intermediate school districts. Section 19 comes from House File 1698. It's a program a scholar loan program intended to encourage academically talented post-secondary students of color to become E-12 teachers. Section 20 comes from House File 811. It directs teacher centers to provide professional development programs to train elementary and secondary teachers who are selected by their district to assist other teachers with math and science curriculum standards and instruction. Sections 21, 22, 23, and 24 are proposals from the governor. 21 strikes language directing school superintendents to report expenditures related to increasing student pass rates on basic skills tests. Section 22 prohibits school boards from charging fees to persons who are serving in active military service and request a transcript be transmitted to a post-secondary institution or prospective employer. Section 23 applies that same intent to non-public schools that receive public aid or services. Section 24 permits the school district to provide transportation. Actually, this provision was in the governor's proposal, but it was amended in the Education Policy Committee. It permits a school district to provide transportation that allows a student who attends a high-need English language learner program and resides within that program's attendance area to continue in the program until the student is able to complete the program. Section 25 comes from House File 1088. It's a colleges in the schools program. It makes eligible school districts able to receive aid for the cost of providing post-secondary college in the school courses. Section 26, 27, 28, and 29 are from House File 1092, and those sections propose to make amendments to the online learning law to allow students to take additional courses and also acknowledge the flexibility that enrollment timelines or the reality of the flexibility of the enrollment timelines under the online learning classes. Sections 30, 31, 32, 33, and 34 are all from House File 1197. Section 30 strikes language that would allow a charter school applicant to apply to the Education Commissioner if the school board fails to vote on a charter school application, and also strikes language directing the commissioner to assist an applicant in finding an eligible sponsor if the school board doesn't elect to sponsor that charter school. Section 31 makes conflict of interest provisions applicable to charter school law generally. Section 32 requires a closed charter school to transmit student education records. This corresponds to an earlier section in this article. Section 33 allows school districts to apply to the education commissioner for a waiver from a requirement to maintain racial balance in certain circumstances where the imbalance results from enrollment of protected students in programs. And the commissioner is directed to grant the waiver if the school district in which the program is offered offers protected students or LEP students the option of enrolling elsewhere and the student's parents choose not to pursue that option. Section 34 directs the education commissioner to establish procedures for distributing Minnesota Indian scholarships. Section 35 comes from House File 990. It directs local school boards to adopt and implement a parent and family involvement policy that promotes and supports communication between home and school, parenting skills, an integral role for parents, welcoming parents in schools, making parents full decision-making partners, and garnering community resources. Section 36, again, comes from House File 365. It refers to the reformulation of aid for intermediate school districts participating in alternative teacher compensation programs. Section 37 comes from House File 985. It extends the authority of the Board of School Administrators to adopt rules from 2007 to 2008. Section 38 results from House File 412. It establishes a grant program intended to promote professional teaching standards through the National Board of Professional Teaching Standards. Section 39 comes from House File 985. This was directed to the Board of School Administrators in the process of amending their rules to require that school administrators have 3 years of classroom teaching experience. Sections 40, 41, 42, and 43 have to do with rulemaking. 41 is a direction to the Board of Teaching. to adopt rules for implementing a statewide credential for education paraprofessionals. 42 is a direction to the Education Commissioner to amend state rules governing supplemental education service providers. Oh, I think I skipped 40. Section 40 directs the Education Commissioner to adopt rules to implement and administer the grad requirements in math and reading, and also in a writing test. I'm sorry, I'm skipping. I'll skip back now to Section 43. That's rulemaking authority directed the Education Commissioner to adopt rules for statewide health and physical education standards. Sections 44 and 45 come from House File 1321 and also 1424. 44 directs the Education Commissioner to employ a full-time state world languages coordinator to assist schools in developing enhancing world languages programs, to collaborate with professionals in developing world language programs, to survey schools to determine what programs exist, to identify exemplary programs, address staff development needs, and ultimately report to the commissioner on the feasibility and structure of a world languages graduation requirement. There is also language directing the Education Department to assist educators in developing and implementing world language programs that acknowledge and reinforce language proficiency and cultural awareness that non-English speakers possess, and encourages students' proficiency in multiple world languages. Section 45 establishes a pilot program to award 5 world language grants of $50,000 each to interested school sites. 3 grants are available to K-8 sites. 1 grant is available to a site interested in a Mandarin Chinese program, and 1 grant is available to a site interested in an indigenous American Indian world languages program. Section 46 comes from House File 1424. This was a proposal to direct the Education Department to recommend to the legislature the standards and process for awarding bilingual and multilingual certificates to K-12 students who develop and maintain proficiency in multiple languages. Section 47 comes from House File 1559. It's a direction to the Education Commissioner to contract with the Minnesota Council on Economic Education to allow 20 teachers to participate in a summer training program so that these teachers then would serve as master teachers to provide professional development to others. Section 48 is another provision from House File 2021. It directs the Office of Educational Accountability to convene and facilitate an advisory group of measurement experts. This group is directed to recommend how to structure school performance data and school performance report cards to fully, fairly, and accurately report student achievement and emphasize school excellence under Minnesota's accountability and reporting system. Section 49 is a combination of House File 835 and 443. It establishes an alternative school calendar pilot program to examine the impact of school calendar arrangements on student learning. Section 50 is another governor's proposal from House File 1197. It transfers administration of the American Indian Scholarship Program from the Education Department to the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Section 51 comes from House File 1694. It's a direction to the Education Commissioner to contract with experts at the University of Minnesota to provide teacher training in using computers and related technology in classrooms. Section 52 is a revisor's instruction. Sections 53, 54, and 55 contain appropriations, and 56 contains 2 repealers. One, a repealer of the programs to prevent or reduce the risk of sexually transmitted infections and diseases, and a repeal of the exemption from licensure requirements for limited English proficiency and English as a second language teacher.
Madam Chair and members, if you turn your appropriations sheet to page 2, we'll look at the Article 2 appropriations. Again, if you look at the 7th column from the right, difference house minus base, fiscal year 2008 and 9, we'll skim down that. Line 67, the first change in Article 2 is the transfer of the American Indian Scholarship Programs to the Minnesota Higher Education Office. The $150,000 increase is a $75,000 per year cut to the agency budget to move, basically move one FTE from the Department of Education to fund this new office. And the next change on line 69, tribal contract schools, the formula for tribal contract schools is linked to the basic education formula, so there's a small increase with the 3 and 3% increase on the basic formula. Line 71 is an additional $5 million for the Department of Education for statewide testing over their base appropriation in that program. Line 73 is another basically technical change, moving a program appropriation of $1,150,000 per year out of the agency budget and putting it up here with the other, this for the value-added indexing with the other testing appropriations. Then on line 74, the current allocation of about $1,200,000 a year for best practices grants is eliminated, resulting in $2.4 million of savings. An additional on line 75, $7.3 million of savings is gained by eliminating first grade preparedness after fiscal 2008 with the creation of the new all-day kindergarten revenue. Then on line 77, there's an increase for advanced placement in IB and an inclusion of college in the schools programs of $16 million. And on line 78, the collaborative urban educator base is increased by $1.5 million. And on line 80, $3 million is provided for the Minnesota Reading Corps program. And line 81, another $1 million for the biennium for early reading intervention. On line 90 is the appropriation to the University of Minnesota of $400,000 for the Office of Educational Accountability. Line 91 and 92, line 91 is a 21st century high school initiative of $9 million, and you can look to, if you look in the language of the bill in Article 2, Section 55, to get a sense of exactly where all that money is allocated. The same on line 92, the Minnesota Teacher Development Initiative of $9 million. So if you look in the appropriations section of Article 2, Section 55.
Page 53, members.
Page 53. Page 54, actually.
Oh.
But that's only one off. You can see the allocation on Subdivision 22 is the 21st Century High Schools initiative. The bulk of the money is in Paragraph C, the 10% addition in career and technical aid that's actually in Article 1. The appropriation for that is here. Then there's $1 million for the alternative school calendar pilot, $500,000 for professional teacher licensure, and so on. I won't read that to you. Then on Subdivision 23, is the Minnesota Teacher Development Program. And again, there's individual allocations of that $9 million that starts on the bottom of page 54 and goes through the repealer on the next page.
Any questions on Article 2? Article 3. Representative Detmer.
Yes. For Mrs. Larson. On page 18, section 16, and then we just go over to page 19, subdivision 4. I believe as a committee we amended that to read opt-in instead of opt-out. Am I correct?
Representative Detmer, I could answer that. Yes, we did. And it's the prerogative of the majority party to put whatever they want from what was done into the omnibus bill, but you have every chance to amend that back in again tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. And I, in fact, see it on the list of amendments from your caucus. We always let the people like me answer the political questions and save the staff for just the clarification questions.
Thank you.
Okay. Are any other questions on Article 2? All right, Article 3.
Madam Chair, members.
Mr. Staff.
Article 3 is the special programs article. Many of these changes are from the governor's bill and technical. Let me just highlight a few for you that I believe this committee should devote some time to. Madam Chair, members, as part of the changes in the special education funding formula, two primary things are happening in addition to the additional money. The first of those is the Disabled Transition Program is being rolled into the regular special education funding category, and the second is the base year for the special education program is being updated from the second prior year to the current year's data. These changes were both included in the governor's bill and are included here, and most of the changes in Article 3 have to do with those changes. So sections 1, 2, 3 all have to do with those changes. Section 4 simply clarifies the way that referendum aid is treated under the non-resident tuition rates. Section 5 is new language for this committee to look at, and in the bill that starts on the bottom of page 7, on line 7.22. This language is language that Representative Slawik has been working on. This was proposed in place of the language that was in her bill that relates to the open enrollment and other tuition agreements for children who are not yet in kindergarten who qualify for special education services. Madam Chair, members, Section 6 is merely clarifying the extended year program. Section 7 is a section that defines the duties and responsibilities for the statewide hearing loss coordinator. Section 8 is clarification. Section 9 has to do with another provision of the governor's recommendation that moves Part C funding directly into the regular special education formula. Sections 10 and 11 are also the clarifying changes as we go from the 2 year prior base year to the current year for special education funding. Then we start with the fiscal effects in section 12. As you can see there, the base revenue for the special education regular formula is being increased. Mr. Crow will talk about this more with the fiscal worksheet, but you can see there that the revenue is going up pretty substantially in the first year and then staying at that level for fiscal year 2009 and thereafter. Section 13 is a clarification related to the base year. Section 14 is a provision that it relates to the maintenance of effort for all school districts in case special education maintenance of effort is not maintained. It details the process the department needs to use to offset school district aid. Section 15, Madam Chair, in the bill draft will be changed tomorrow. This was an oversight on our part. This will be as part of the author's amendment. The governor originally proposed that excess costs be keyed off of the prior year instead of the current year, but that's not really the department's intent, and so your author's amendment tomorrow will make that change with the section as well. So both the regular and the excess cost formulas will key off current year data. Section 16 sets the special education excess cost statewide cap up at about $23 million higher than where it currently is. Section 17 is a clarification regarding the way that bills must be paid for children who are placed by court action in another state when those special ed bills are returned to the resident district. Section 18 is another clarification change on the referendum aid portion that goes into those bills. Then Section 19 is the waiver process that school districts and others may use from the uniform tuition billing calculations. This language has gone through several modifications. I believe this is the same form as the committee last saw this provision. It does allow school districts to seek waivers for the uniform tuition billing and allows an alternative calculation of special education revenue for one more year. Section 20 establishes a task force that's chaired and presided over by the Commissioner of the Bureau of Mediation Services that is to study and compare state and federal special education requirements. I'll jump ahead to the repealer, and then Mr. Crow will talk about the appropriations in this article. The first repealer is related to the funding for the Transition for Disabled Students programs. Those sections are being repealed since that funding is being added to the regular special education funding. The next section is out of the governor's bill concerning the Coordinating Interagency Services Commission for Students with Disabilities. The next two changes The first of those is no longer needed because of the way that the flexible year and learning year program language has been rewritten. And the second change is in 125A76 sub D3. That change has to do with using the two-year prior base data, and since we're going to current year base data, is no longer necessary.
Madam Chair and members, if you turn to your spreadsheet, at the bottom of page 2, you'll see Article 3 on starting on line 101. Basically, the changes, there are several changes in each of the regular and excess cost special ed appropriations, so I've separated them out to give you a sense of what's happening related to all of the changes. So, for example, lines 101 to 104 are all the numbers that go into the special ed regular appropriation. The line 101 basically just shows you the base appropriation for special ed. That's why there's a zero difference between house and base. So for descriptive purposes, line 102 is the increase in regular special ed, and you see that at $65 million. That basically amounts to about a 6.5% increase over the biennium in special ed regular. In order to keep the tails flat relative to where the first year of appropriations are, most of the money is built into the first year. 6.4% of the 6.5 is built into the first year as the appropriation entitlement goes up by about $34 million. And then in the second year, it increases by $34.5 million in order to help make sure we meet the state maintenance of effort requirement. So the appropriation cost of that is $65 million. Then on the next line, transition programs are rolled in on line 104. So on 103 is the inflation of about 3%, and then kept flat for transition disabled, similarly to the regular special ed. And then line 104 is the roll-in of the base amount of transition programs. So 103 and 104 are transition programs inflated and then rolled into the regular special ed appropriation. And that looks like a $16.7 million increase, but you can see down below on line 111, there's a reduction of $16.7 million. So again, it's a movement from one appropriation into another appropriation. And similarly, on lines 105 is the regular special ed costs of rolling in the Part C expansion to regular special ed. And then lines 106 to 108 are similar kind of breakout of the changes in excess cost. You can see on line 107 there's an excess cost increase of about $40 million, $39 million. That is a 22% increase in the first year and a 1% increase in the second year on special ed excess cost. The entitlement is increased by $23 million in 08 and $24 million in 09 with a net cost of $39 million. And then there's the roll-in of the Part C expansion to special ed excess cost. So then if you look on line... Oh, then in addition, there's $20,000 on line 114 for the Special Education Task Force. So on line 116, you see the total increase in special education of about $106 million, split roughly 60-40 between regular special education and special ed excess cost appropriations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Crow. Any questions on this article? Okay. Then let's go on to Article 4.
Madam Chair, members, Article 4 is the Facilities and Technology article. Let me briefly go through those changes for you. Some of these changes related to the tax rates and the levy are also included in Representative Marquardt's property tax article that was released today. Madam Chair, the first three sections of this bill are similar to the bills that came before this committee regarding debt service equalization. A couple of things happen. One, the equalizing factor is set at 100% of the state average tax base per pupil unit, which is about $6,900 per pupil, and then the two tiers are reduced to a one-tier system based either over or under 15%. So on the debt service equalization program now, the debt levy under 15% is all local. That over 15% is equalized with an equalizing factor set at about $6,900. Madam Chair, Section 4 then adds a debt service and school bond agricultural credit appropriation. What's happening here is in Section 5, there's a new property tax credit being created. A property tax credit is where the state pays the taxing jurisdiction to make up for the tax revenue that's forgone when the taxpayer receives a credit for that tax. In this case, the taxpayer are those folks that are paying agricultural property tax on their debt levies, the amount necessary for school bonds. There's a credit created in Section 5, and this credit essentially will pay somewhere between 20 and 23%. This number is still a little bit in flux as other changes to the base are being considered. But essentially somewhere around $10 million a year will be in a credit that will be paid directly to farmers, or directly rather to school districts to make up for the lower farm taxes that go for school bond payments. Madam Chair, members, Section 6 is a provision related to the treatment of alternative facilities bonds under the Health and Safety Revenue Program. This was a recommendation from the governor's bill, as was Section 7, setting a 10-year limit on capital project referendums. The next couple of changes correspond with the first three sections. Those set the statewide ANTC equalizing factor, defines that term and sets it equal to the statewide tax base, ANTC tax base per pupil unit. And then the next change, Representative Erickson had the bill that would change the sales ratio for maximum effort school districts and eliminate the effects that limited market value has on that. This section makes those changes so that the sales ratio applies to the estimated market value instead of the limited market value of the school district. And I think there's still some discussions here with the Property Tax Committee. The same sales ratio may be used for all school district levies and not just the debt service levy. It really won't have much fiscal effect. It'll be an internal adjustment if that takes place. Section 10 is a provision relating to the Minneapolis School District. Currently, the Minneapolis School District has limited time authority to levy an additional $15 million per year in school bonds. This provision would permanently extend that authority for the district. Section 11 it removes the LMV calculation for purposes of calculating the sales ratio. This is in concert with Section 9. Sections 12, 13, 14, and 15 and 16 all have to do with the new agricultural credit that's being created and the way that that credit is treated as a tax rate and also treated on the tax statements. Section 17 does three things. First, it establishes a task force to make recommendations regarding school district technology standards and systems. The second thing it does is require the task force to make a report to the legislature. And then finally, this provision provides one-time funding of $30 per pupil unit in fiscal year 2009 for technology funding. Section 18 is lease levy authority for the Spring Lake Park School District. This allows the district to use its lease levy for administrative purposes. Under current law, a district is limited to using that authority for instructional purposes. Sections 19 and 20 are the same authority that was granted to Minneapolis in Section 10 for the St. Paul School District. These two sections would allow the school district to permanently levy an additional, or sell bonds rather, of an additional $15 million per year for building needs.
Madam Chair and members, if you turn to the appropriations spreadsheet, page 3 of 4, we can look at the Article 4 changes. Lines 126 and 127 are the levy reductions related to the changes on debt service equalization. You can see they cost about $25 million combined, and we'll see a corresponding reduction over on the levy side. Page 1 or line 130 is the $9 million that's needed to fully fund the existing telecommunication access formula for fiscal 2008 and 2009. For 2010 and later, the formula is reset at its current base level of $3.75 million. Then on line 134, there's a $132,000 appropriation for Red Lake Emergency Aid Grant. And then on line 136, $29 million tied to the $30 per pupil technology aid in fiscal 2009. 137 is $20,000 for the technology task force, and 138 is $126,000 for the Eden Valley-Watkins School District for its mercury spill cleanup. If you go to the levy sheet and look on page 2, the very back page of that spreadsheet tracking, you can see some the changes related to the equalization changes on debt, and they appear on lines 106 through 109. 106 is the on debt, similar to the discussion we had on referendum, there are two effects that result in aid not equaling the total levy reduction that we get when you put additional aid in debt service equalization. One is that in maximum effort districts, there's not a one-to-one swap because of their maximum effort tax rate, so you see some additional costs in addition to the on line 106. And then on line 108, well, and included in that line is a when there's additional equalization aid on debt, similarly to operating referendums, we assume that there will be additional debt referendums passed. Then line 108, you see the net result of the higher equalizing factor, and line 109, the net result of the $10 million ag land credit. So you can see on line 135, there's a total of about $22 million of tax relief tied to the equalization changes in Article 4.
Question on Section Emmert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the bank on tax credit, now that would be on existing, that's going to be just for taxes payable whenever this comes effective. So it has anything to do with when the bond referendum was passed, isn't that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, yes, that's true. It would apply to those existing bond referendums and new ones.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stromer, Mr. Crowe, the provisions in Article 4, Section 10, regarding the Minneapolis School District, and Section 20 regarding the St. Paul School District, what line on the levy targets will I see that?
Mr. Crowe.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and Representative Garofalo, those will show up in fiscal 2011 on the levy tracking sheet, and your question makes me realize I think I forgot to put them on there. So there'll be another in the debt fund on the levy tracking sheet. There'll be another line added that'll show a fiscal 2011 change of let me get the exact number here. $2.4 million of additional levy in fiscal 2011.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo and members, it happens that late because of the timing of the bond sales and repayment of the bonds. That's why it doesn't have a current impact.
You know, it's scary that staff can read my mind and know the question I was thinking about asking.
They are very perceptive.
I guess, Madam Chair, just one follow-up to that. Mr. Crowe, the authorization is for $15 million, or for $30 million. Why would it be $2.4
million? Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, it's like taking on a mortgage. That's the 2.4 is the payment on the bonds.
I apologize for wasting the committee's time. Thank you.
Okay. And then on to Article 5.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Article 5 is the nutrition and accounting article. Several of the sections in this article come from Representative Benson's bill, House File 236, including the first first four sections, I believe. The first two sections have to do with the publication of budget information of a school district. Every year, the school district's required to notify the public of its revenue, expenditures, fund balances, and other relevant budget information. These two sections essentially are being reversed in order, and what's happening is the substantive sections put it first, and then the notification section is put second. School districts are required essentially to include these materials in their truth and taxation documents, as well as post them on their website and also publish them in the qualified newspaper of general circulation within the district. Section 3 strikes language regarding the school district superintendent's annual report identifying the expenditures needed to achieve a certain passage rate on the basic skills test. Section 4 strikes some language that relates to the school board informing each principal of the amount of money generated at each site by their school district using their general education revenue. There's a provision that's coupled with this that the department suggested that is in Section 8. Essentially what's happening here with the new language in Section 8 is there's still a way for school districts to reallocate compensatory among sites if a site open or closes or otherwise school attendance boundaries change. And the reason for that provision is because compensatory revenue is based on the pupil count from the previous fall. So if, for example, because there's a requirement to spend that money at the site, if the site closes, this allows the district to say, well, those kids now are at the following sites. Section 5 is from Representative Welty's bill, and this provision would allow consolidating school districts to essentially merge their and combine their fund balances and move money between accounts right following the year of consolidation. Under current statute, the individual boards have to make that decision before the consolidation. This would give the consolidated board in its first couple of meetings the chance to rearrange the fund balances and the account structure so that fund balance penalties, for example, wouldn't apply to the district. Section 6 is from Representative Benson's bill. This essentially eliminates, this language was also picked up in the governor's supplemental budget recommendations regarding reserve accounts, and eliminates those reserve accounts that statutory authority no longer exists for. Section 7 has to do with the school lunch calculation and raises the amount of each meal that's reimbursed from 10.5 to 12 cents. Section 8, as I mentioned earlier, is the language that corresponds to the change in Section 4. Section 9 was Representative Peterson and others' bill regarding the levy authority for those school districts that are part of the Cooperative Secondary Facility Program that allows those districts to levy for certain severance and retirement costs for a period of up to 10 years at a maximum levy amount of not more than $150,000.
And, Mr. Crow, we should note that this is also Representative Heidgerken's district.
Madam Chair, members, there are now a couple provisions related to the timelines for the truth and taxation process for school districts to follow. These were from Representative Demmer's bill. They start in Section 10. Currently, for most school districts, they get their forms with the levy limits on them at the end of September, and then very quickly need to turn those back in if they're going to have a proposed levy that's different than that. Truth and taxation is a three-step process. There's the levy limit, the proposed levy, and the certified levy. This provision extends that timeline a little bit, which actually gives school districts a chance to use their regular board meetings to set a proposed levy that's different than their levy limit. And this is helpful for those school districts that may have large amounts of health and safety revenue or other amounts where they're entitled to a great deal of a revenue authority on the levy but don't intend to exercise it in that year. Sections 11 and 12 relate to primary elections in school boards. Those are from Representative Benson's bill. Section 13 and 14 are provisions that are also coupled with Section 10 from Representative Demmer's bill, extending the certification deadline for school districts to allow the proposed levy to be set just a little bit later. Section 15 is from Representative Bensonville and directs the Education Department to submit a report to the legislature describing the district's data collection procedures and requiring department to recommend a streamlined web-based version of reporting data for school districts. Section 16 is a provision specific to the Plainville-Elgin-Millville School District consolidation and allows that district to readjust its fund balances for purposes of the next 2 years, and this is coupled by an appropriation to make up for the fund balance penalty for the last year that Mr. Crow will mention when he gets to the appropriation sections. Section 17 includes all of the operating capital account transfers that this committee heard. Those are for the Brainerd, Campbell, Tinta, and the Jackson County Central School District. The change from the bills that you heard when Jackson County Central was here, an amendment was offered that would allow the district to do its fund balance transfer both this year and next year. The language in the bill only allows the fund transfer for the current year. And then finally, if you skip the appropriation for a moment, there is a reviser instruction, and that goes back to Section 1 to just flip the order of Section 1 and 2 in the statute so the substantive language comes first.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, the Article 5 changes on appropriations are on page 3 of the appropriations tracking sheet. There are two. The first is the 1.5 cent increase in school lunch you see on line 144, $3 million, and the $17,000 to Plainview School District on line 147.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on Article 5? Article 6.
Madam Chair, members, Article 6 governs libraries. Section 1 directs the Education Department to provide specialized services to the blind and physically handicapped through the Minnesota Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped under a cooperative plan. Section 2 declares that for the purposes of regional library basic support grants, that funds collected from a sales and use tax that is for extending the operating hours of Hennepin County and Minneapolis Public Libraries should not be considered amounts to support public library operations. And Section 3 contains library appropriations.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow, the Article 6 spreadsheet.
Madam Chair and members, Article 6 is on line 151 to 156 of your spreadsheet, page 3. There's an additional $5 million in basic library support on line 151. $800,000 a year in multi-county, multi-type library systems on 152. And line 154, regional library telecommunications is increased by about $1 million a year. And then on line 155 is $4.5 million to facilitate the Hennepin County Minneapolis Library Systems merger.
Okay, any questions on Article 6? Okay, Article 7.
Madam Chair, members, Article 7 governs state agencies. Section 1 of this article, and I notice we have it as Section 4 in our bill summary, but it should be Section 1, directs the Education Commissioner to establish representative American Indian Education Committees that are charged with advising the Commissioner on administering programs governed by the state's American Indian Education Act. And also other programs governing the educating of American Indian people. Section 2, which reads 5 in the bill summary, directs the local county registrar to deposit $3 of the marriage license fee in a state government special revenue fund that is subsequently appropriated to the Commissioner of Public Safety for parenting time centers. Section 3 grants the Education Commissioner rulemaking authority governing the administering of career and technical programs for students in grades 7 through 12 to ensure that these programs can be administered to serve students appropriately under current state and local organizational structures. The next sections on the department, the Minnesota State Academies, the Perfect Center for Arts Education, Department of Public Safety, contain appropriations.
Very good.
Madam Chair and members, the agency appropriations start on line 170 of the spreadsheet, page 3 at the bottom. In a few places, there are 2% per year increases for compensation changes. Those show up on line 173 and 174 for the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators, and also on line 178 for the Department of Education. And that's the same amount recommended by the governor. Then there are appropriations for three different rules, promulgation of three rules, $7,000 each. And then on line 182 is the $40,000 per year for the early hearing loss intervention coordinator from Article 2. And then line 183 is the $75,000 reduction to the MDE budget to accomplish the moving of the American Indian Scholarship Program to the higher ed office. Line 184 is moving the value-added index program up into the program budget, so it's just a reduction here and an increase of $2.3 million up in the testing line. Then for the state academies for the deaf and blind, there's line 190 is the compensation adjustment, 2 and 2 for them. Line 191 was a campus security system. They requested some initial startup and ongoing staffing funding for. Line 192 is $90,000 primarily for computer staff. There's an initiative by the governor to allocate some money in the Office of Education Technology for small agency technology. That would be in the state government finance bill. This is the staff component for that. And then line 193 is $50,000 per year to accommodate their mainstreaming contract cost increases. And then for the Center for Arts Education, there's a change on line 199, which adds the governor's recommended amount of compensation adjustment for that agency of $314 for the biennium. And if you look, you can see various comparisons at the bottom of the spreadsheet. For example, on line 212, you can see that the total increase over the base for the biennium is 7.2%. If you look to the very bottom of the spreadsheet, line 269, you see that compared to the 06-07 biennium, not including the half a billion dollars of SHIP payments, the total education budget is up about 9.2%. And then, since we finished the effects of levies in the bill, I just point your attention to the bottom of the levy tracking sheet as well. You can see those same kind of comparisons. If you look on line 187, you see that relative to current law, the House, this bill would lower school levies by about $125 million in fiscal 2009, which is a 6.3%, you see on line 191, reduction from current law. There are, if you look on line 188, under certified estimate, there are $210 million of levy increases built into the base. So the $125 million reduction takes out more than half of that, but still leaves a net of $85 million levy increase between 07, fiscal 08, and fiscal 09, so about 4.8%.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Crow. And then Articles 8 and 9, do you want to tell us why we don't have those?
Madam Chair, Article 8 is the education forecast adjustments. What this is adjustments of the fiscal 2007 appropriations to account for the changes in the February forecast. It doesn't cost anything because all of those, whether they cost or save money, they were all factored into the forecast. So basically what it does is allow us to line up our appropriations in law to the forecast changes that were made in the February forecast.
Thank you very much. And I see we do have those. We just don't have them on our summary.
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, customarily we include an article at the request of the reviser. She, from one session to the next, collects all kinds of technical changes, conforming changes that she would like to make. And as a courtesy, the bill contains this article to permit her to make the changes she suggests.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And then the final section, Article 10.
Madam Chair, members, Article 10 is the pupil transportation article. This has the bus standards and other pupil transportation measures exactly as they were in Representative Dietrich's bill, House File 665. So if you don't mind, I'm not going to review those. Those are the same as when we heard them last week.
Mr. Strong, we just did hear it last week, and if anyone needs to ask about that, they can ask Representative Dietrich later on. Any questions? Any final questions from any members? Representative Rockwell.
Thank you. Madam Chair, with regards to the early childhood portions that will be in this bill, what's the process for how that will be attached to this?
Representative Rockwell and others might be curious as well. They will be, Representative Flawick will be presenting her bill in Representative Murphy's Finance Committee on Wednesday, and then we will be presenting our bill in Representative Murphy's Finance Committee on Thursday, and then after the spring break, then we have to go to taxes, the Representative Carlson's Finance Committee and Ways and Means, and in Representative Carlson's Finance Committee, the early childhood and the K-12 bill will be put together to conform with the Senate having the two bills together and ready for conference committee. Representative Rockwell.
And Madam Chair, when that goes presumably from finance, it would go to Ways and Means or at some point?
Representative Rockwell, yes.
How will that reconcile with the budget targets? Because the K-12 omnibus bill will now be, I would presume, would now be over the...
Well, Representative Garofalo, the Early Childhood Committee has a budget target as well, so we'll just add them together.
Right.
Representative Garofalo.
And Madam Chair, but that bill is being split in two. Part of it's going to HHS.
Representative Garofalo will prorate our part, taking all we can get, but the early child care will go to Health and Human Services. You're right. So they'll just figure out the appropriations, and that will be just a matter of mathematical computation. So is there anyone in the audience? We've got about 5 minutes left. Who is? Okay. Mr. Strom, this may take up the last of the 5 minutes. We have a printout that Mr. Strom needs to go over with us.
Madam Chair, I hope we don't need to spend the 5 minutes on this. Just for committee members' information, what they'll get in terms of printouts, the thing that was passed out today, this portrait style is general education revenue. This shows each district's general education revenue per student, per adjusted average daily membership student, for both fiscal year 08 and fiscal year 09 compared to base, the percentage increases in the middle of the page and the end of the page show those changes over base. We're going to have a similar printout that includes all major categories of revenue, including special education, career and tech integration. We're still narrowing down our differences with the department on the special education portion of that, and when we get that ready, we'll have that available for you as well. Finally then, Madam Chair, these printouts are put together on a spreadsheet that has what we call a lookup table on it so that we can print out detailed information for each district, and I think it's been customary the last few years that those big packets are made for each caucus and then members can look at their pages and also have it available online so that they can put in their district number and see what happens to LEP funding or extended time funding or any other component for their district.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. And this is a really quite a luxury to be able to do this, and I would recommend that members actually take a look at that because that will answer a lot of questions. Any other general questions from anybody? Okay. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to know how you're paying for this.
Representative Erickson?
This bill, yes.
This bill, we are getting the money from the Tax Committee. Any other questions? Okay. Is there anybody, with our last remaining minutes, probably one or two people, is there anybody that cares to give us any first fresh comments on the bill? We're sure we'll be hearing from lots of people. We've had a lot of thanks from people in the audience, and we appreciate that. If anyone's particularly unhappy, please contact us as well. All right. We'll see everyone tomorrow. Meeting's adjourned.